Welcome to the Java.net Community Corner podcast series for Java 1 2008. In this series of podcasts, we bring you the activity of the Community Corner, located at booth 101 on the Java 1 Pavilion floor, including mini-talks about projects hosted on Java.net and other community activities. All right, welcome back, everyone. It is 5 o'clock on Tuesday at the Java.net Community Corner mini-talks. Next up, we have Bard Lind and Thor Toto Hetland talking about EDR, which is the Enterprise Domain Repository, which is a new pattern that produces real domain objects and copes with complexity of handling disjointed data sources, back-end performance, and mastering strategies. So take it away, Bard.
Thank you very much. Yeah, welcome to this mini-talk on Enterprise Domain Repository, a way to solve real-life trouble with your distributed data. At this slide, you'll see the overview of the Enterprise Domain Repository, as you might have it in the middle of the screen here. And I'll move straight on to the agenda. We'll try to explain a little bit about what we've seen as being the problem, and why we try to develop this pattern. We'll have a look at some of the typical integration challenges that you might find in an enterprise setting, and in ObjectWare, we've been producing a different approach to service orientation, that you actually categorize your services into four categories. So we'll have a look at those as well. And then we'll move on to how Enterprise Domain Repository will actually solve these challenges for you, and as well as do a proper presentation of each part of the pattern. You might be familiar with this picture here, that you are having a lot of different data sources that is trying to synchronize on a one-to-one, probably in from one data source to the other, and you have 1,000 clients talking to a lot of different core systems. This makes a real hard challenge with keeping your data up to date. So you want to that's sort of the problem that we're trying to solve here, is how do you want to keep your data up to date? As well as you saw in the previous picture, how do you define your customer? You have one definition in the billing core system, you have another definition in your legacy system, and you'll have a third definition of your custom in your CRM application. And for instance, if you have an address in each of these systems, what is the correct address when the customer itself maybe is updating his address but is not allowed to update into the CRM system because of some policy rules? You'll have two different addresses, and you can't really understand or detect, actually, which is okay and which is the old one. And the reason for that is that we have to accept that we have multiple backends, and they have actually a business value. That's why they're there. They've been developed through lots of years, and we have to still respect that we need them. We'll move on to an example where we'll be using a delivery address and a billing address from the legacy and the billing systems. The other two, the inventory and the CRM, we'll just move away just for simplicity. And the example will be that, like I said a bit earlier here, the customer will call to customer support and tell that the billing address is changing, even though their customer support is not allowed to update the billing system. So how do you solve that today? Maybe you just neglect it. Maybe you send a mail to someone because somebody on customer support actually knows where to or who are allowed to do the update. Okay. And then you have the data mastering problem. Who's the owner of the data? Like customer support, we're not allowed to update into the billing system. But actually, they were sitting closest to the data because they knew what was the correct data. As well as when you want to show these addresses on the web, you will have trouble deciding how to merge to decide which address is actually the most valid. Maybe it's just a typo in one of the addresses and you don't detect that and you sort of neglect one of the sources. And also when you do an update, how do you decide how you merge an update that is happening in two different systems about the same time? Maybe you'll just have to ignore one of those updates. And that's sort of what we're trying to solve, how the data quality is suffering, because it's difficult to update data, and the data entered are in the incorrect format. Another thing is, what if one of those backends were actually really slow? It would take a lot of time for you to pick up that domain object from one of those sources. While maybe it's only changing once a week, so you should be able to cache it. But you have no proper means to talk with the business people that says, okay, yeah, caching is fine, because they say, no, we need to have up-to-date data all the time. We don't accept that these data is out of date by definition. And also another thing is that when you're building these domain objects, the building itself might be time-consuming. So having a central repository from all of these back-end systems actually helps you to improve your performance. Okay. As I said, we want to change. We want to have a different approach on the services. What is a service? And we want to divide that into four categories, starting from top with human to application services. That would typically be your web tier. And you have a different category. That is application-to-application service. Those services would be a customer credit check. Maybe that you go out to an external provider of credit ratings, and you combine that with data gained from your own backend systems. So we then try to identify that this is a different kind of services compared to what the human-to-application service is. For instance, the human-to-application service shouldn't have any state. Maybe your application-to-application service should be the one to keep your state, or maybe the aggregated core service. It's sort of no hierarchy. You don't need to follow through all four layers here. It's categories, not layers. From the bottom, you'll have a core service, and that is actually what building your customer object from these separate data sources, from the billing and legacy system and merging those together, and that's where EDR is coming in, is actually doing the merge. If you want to do a, for instance, get a delivery address from something totally different, totally different system, you would put that into the aggregated core system. Aggregated core service, sorry. What we also identified by this service categorization is the cost of change versus the need for agility. A core service, you don't know how many clients you're going to have. You're going to have a few quite or very steady core services that very rarely should be updated. So it will be very costly if you change the interface of this this service. That's while at the web tier, you know that it should be updated maybe several times a week. So you'll have a very rapid change on the top and a very slow one at the bottom. Okay. And some more examples. Let's move on to the enterprise domain repository definition of that one. This is the picture. You have now all the customers and partners are trying to work through one service that is central to all these providers. And you have a few components that is necessary. You have the repository controller. You'll have a provider controller that controls the data retrieval from each provider, each backend. You'll have a domain object factory that is actually doing the merging of the data. And it will create a domain object for you, put that into the repository, and you have a pure domain object going out of the repository. The correlator, I'll describe a bit later. Okay. The repository controller, that's the your public interface. That's the one all your clients are talking to. That one should be... that one should hide the underlying complexity regarding domain-driven design from Eric Evans, who's trying to reuse his patterns. What the repository controller is doing is to get the provider objects, create a domain object and create a correlating ID, and that's very important here, is that you have you're not trying to use an ID for one of your providers as the one you expose, because they might be okay for a read operation only, but if you want to try to push data back, then it's very important that your domain object has a unique ID that is stored in the correlator, which then knows into which provider it can store its data back. Okay. The provider controller knows about the different providers you are using, and it knows how to get the data from these. It supports the repository controller, but it doesn't know the details of each backend, each provider. That's what the provider will do. That will talk to your each one of your backend systems, do all the integration challenges there, just talking to them, and you'll hide it there. You won't expose that, for instance, to an ESP as you do in other products. This is what defines this approach to the products from the ESP solutions. The good thing about this is, like, now you've really defined very well how to talk to your provider. You can create SLAs, service level agreements on these. And you can go to your business owner and say, hey, this system, it's supposed to be up 98%, but actually it isn't. Hey, this system is really slow. It's supposed to deliver your data in 20 milliseconds. It needs 2 seconds. Well, you never complain about this, but here you actually see that this data we can cache. We can improve your performance and lower your cost on your mainframe because you very clearly can identify here that there's responsibility of each provider or the boundary of the responsibility of each provider. The provider object is the object that you're retrieving from your backend system. In our example, the customer objects or the provider object, customer objects from each of the backend systems. It's more or less just a DAO. Okay, and then we have the correlator. I've been talking a little bit about that. It's easy to forget our experience been that some people have stopped using it because they didn't need it. And then the adoption has been a success. And when you try to store data back into the providers, you don't have a unique identification anymore. What you want to do about the correlator is to create a mapping between the IDs in each of the providers and the ID that you give to your domain object. That's what its main purpose is. Okay. The domain object factory retrieves the provider objects. Mingles those together into one domain object. What technique you select to do that there, or maybe use some product to actually do that merge for you, it's nothing in the pattern that we define that you have to do that. We try to say that, okay, start easy. When you go into more complicated work, do your data management probably around your domain object factory. Okay. In the end, we've merged the data from our providers into a new domain object. It's the one defined customer object. In our example, it will not only be a DAO, but it will also have business functionality as a true object. This object can be serializable and sent to your client, and they can operate on this domain object, and then they can later on pass it back into the repository controller and do an update from the client, which means that your client is actually doing operations on your domain object. It's not just manipulating data and passing those back. The repository is a cache. Maybe it should be named cache, but anyhow, it's a cache for the objects that you created, and on your next retrieval you can just get it from the repository. There is another issue that this pattern solves, and that is actually a fire and forget update. I said that, well, maybe one of your providers are really slow. What if one of those are actually down? But you know the data from that one is only updated every week. Okay, you got a domain object that is valid in your cache. So the retrieval, of course, is okay. But then when you would try to write back, you can tag this this object, domain object, and well, you weren't able to write down to all your providers, but maybe that's fine. When the provider is coming back online again, that's actually when you do the update. For the client, it looks like the update went okay. Of course, you can send a message with the update saying, hey, this is delayed in one of your systems. But except from that, you are actually able to do a fire and forget update. So let's go into what EDR actually solves. It's performance, as we've been talking about. It's evolvability of your system in front of the repository controller. We want to have an interface that actually handles multiple clients at multiple versions, that you put a different pattern that we're talking about, Enterprise Service ESE, in front of that, to ensure that at your best, you try to actually do what the client is trying to achieve. That's what it does with the availability. And predictability, control of your data and maintainability, I'll go into a bit later. Okay, performance. As I said, slow backends. You can talk easier to your business people because you really clearly defines your service level agreements, so you can challenge your managed or the manager of your customer to say, hey, we actually have detected something here that you think you're doing well, but we can do it better. Performance, because you don't need to rebuild complex domain objects because they're cached. The fire and forget update, as I talked about. And you'll also have a fast possibility of doing a faster update because you can do this without the need of directly calling your providers. That can be done asynchronously in the back. You ensure your evolvability of your system by doing loose coupling. You hide the versioning behind the provider and behind the repository controller. So when you do an update, you don't need to update every client. Predictability, back end downtime hurts less, because you are able to store the update that you want, you have a cached version, and your information is not lost. When you do a little bit more about what Total will do in the next speech, which is data mastering, when you add that into this pattern as well, you have a more consistent data quality. Data mastering can thus be divided into its own unit. You can use a product, you can use a simple XML, XSLT transformation. You can choose the tool that you fit your need the most. At the same time, you can record what's the difference in my data here. I'm collecting data from different providers, and still, maybe that's okay, but you can then record and send it to a moderator that is actually asked, hey, we have different differences in our system, should they be updated? Or maybe you do this update automatically. You see, detect the differences from one provider to the other in the same data, and you do an automatic update even without the client knowing anything about it. Of course, if those data qualities workings are taking too much time, as it might be when your data differs very much, you have to set a level to where you actually do want the updates or where you do want the notifications. Maybe you'll have to accept that some of your data is invalid or very different. Maintainability. I talked about the service level agreements. Backend update is less painful, and the client is only connected to this service, and it's not connected to each and every one of the backend systems, which means that you have less red arrows, as we saw in one of the first slides. Okay, why use the Enterprise Domain Repository? Services exposed with higher granularity of larger responsibility grew too complex over time. It helps keeping your domain data consistent, and it's up to the service to decide which data to use and where to update. It's not the client that has that responsibility. What alternatives do we have to Enterprise Domain Repositories? We searched, and we haven't found any single solution that solves it. So please enlighten us. There might be some product that we're seeing that managed to do it. We haven't found it. Okay. This is not a pattern that is sort of just come from our research and development team. It's experiences gained in both .NET and Java worlds in our company. So we used that in four cases with success. And yeah, the names I can't reveal here, unfortunately, but it's the experiences from those four projects in both .NET and Java, as well as the accumulated experiences from the team. Okay, and some of the challenges we found is that there was a problem making the customer understand that the data is always a copy of the real data and can be cached. Actually talking to the customer make him understand that your data is not live, it's still a copy, even if it's in the database. Okay. That's it. Any questions?
Where can I find out more about this pattern?
If you go to java.net, you have the EDR, java.net. It's a community project there, so you can go there. Okay.
All right, thank you very much. That was Bard Lind talking about the Enterprise Domain Repository, and we're going to have another EDR talk next, and that's going to be Toto Hetland on EDR MDS, a less is more approach to master data services, and that'll be up at 5:30, so that's just a few minutes away. So we hope you'll join us then. Thank you.
This has been the Java.net Community Corner Podcast. Check out more mini talks from Java 1 2008 at today.java.net/pub/ct/Java 1 Community Corner, or subscribe to our feed with iTunes.